satirical way to tackle that issue. Peng Minweng is a 28-year-old industrial designer. He has invented a robotic eyeball people can wear to avoid accidents when using their phones while walking. The device is strapped to the forehead and opens its eyelids when the users lower their heads. The third eye then beeps in warning when the user comes within 1 or 2 meters of an obstacle. Peng says his device is not a solution to the issue and hopes that people will understand the severity of their reliance on gadgets when they see the third eye.
A science professor has released spectacular drone footage of lava streaming from an Icelandic volcano. Sørensen Johnson flew a drone over the volcano 2 months after it started erupting. He captured close-up shots of lava bubbling in its crater in the southwest of Iceland's capital. The volcanologists say that they have no idea how long this eruption will continue, adding that magma could flow for years. Iceland is home to dozens of active volcanoes. Volcanic landscapes have turned into a tourist attraction in the Scandinavian country. Two Russian cosmonauts have conducted spacewalk outside the International Space Station to prepare an old docking module for disposal. The duo spent more than 7 hours outside the ISS to wrap up preparations for the eventual disposal of the Pris docking compartment. According to NASA officials, the Russian cargo freighter will remove the two-decade-old module from the orbiting laboratory later this summer. Both the cargo ship and the Pris will burn up in the atmosphere above the Pacific Ocean. The orbiting Pris will clear the way for the arrival of a new Russian multipurpose laboratory module named Nuka, meaning science in Russian. Nuka is scheduled to launch on July the 15th this year. Wednesday's operation was the sixth spacewalk in 2021 in support of the Space Station Assembly, maintenance and upgrades.
A rare albino baby elephant that was rescued from poachers in South Africa has found a new home with a welcoming herd. The calf, named Han Yi Sa, was caught in a snare in the Kruger National Park when she was only 4 months old. She suffered several nasty wounds, including one to her mouth. Han Yi Sa remained trapped in the snare for 4 days before being rescued and taken to a shelter especially built for elephants northeast of Johannesburg. All the other elephants there are orphans too.
Each female that we had has a baby. So except for them, all of the others are orphaned. And I think that is part of the reason why they accept these orphans, because they know how it feels, you know, and they become actually, you know, the mother figures for them.
The calf has learned to adapt to the new life. She lies under the shadow cast by bigger elephants to protect herself from getting sunburned. The shelter says if the herd grows too big for the area, she and other elephants will be released into the wild.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A Brazilian artist has found a way to reuse plastic bags in a very creative way, making something beautiful out of them. Eduardo Schroer turns recycled shreds of plastic into real pieces of artwork. He picks up the material from city streets and rivers. Without using a drop of paint, Schroer recreates paintings by Picasso, Van Gogh, and other famous artists. He says his goal is to draw attention to plastic pollution.
I present this series as a product that does not have paint, except for what has already been processed into plastic by the industry. It does not have glue. It is a box that was built, and inside I press and condense it. I make an accumulated cluster of plastic bags that ends up creating this image that you see.
Sura's exhibition is due to open in Sao Paulo in the coming months. His previous works were also aimed at raising awareness about the environment. He has created several giant installations in public places, mostly along polluted rivers.
Chinese archaeologists have unearthed a rare 3,000-year-old bronze figure from a site they have been excavating for months in Sichuan province. The 1.5-meter figure deemed one of China's most famous archaeological discoveries. It consists of two parts. The upper part is 55 centimeters high with a zoon, a vessel used in ancient times, on top of the head. The lower part is 60 centimeters in size with kneeling posture. Similar findings in the past were just 20 centimeters in their heights. The bronze figure was discovered under massive ivory objects. So far, over 500 objects, including ivory, bronze, gold, and jade ware, have been found from six sacrificial pits of the Sanjiangdu ruins. A Chinese man becomes the first blind Asian mountaineer to successfully scale the world's tallest peak, the Mount Everest. Zhang Hong completed the 8,849-meter high Himalayan feat with three high-altitude guides. The 46-year-old climber said he spent much of his trek holding onto his guide's arm. The pair said the most tiresome and risky areas were the so-called death zones, ice walls, and ice falls at around 8,000 meters. The Chinese climber recalled humbly embracing being part of Mother Nature after he completed his arduous journey.
No matter if you're disabled or normal, whether you have lost your eyesight or you have no legs or hands, it doesn't matter. As long as you have a strong mind, you can always complete anything that other people think you can't.
Zhang added that this is only the beginning. He said his next milestone is climbing the highest peaks from the world's continents, known as the Seven Summits. The Chinese mountaineer lost his eyesight at the age of 21. After his success, he became the third visually impaired person to ever step foot on the Everest peak. Russian company has developed a fully self-driving car that looks like it was taken right out of a sci-fi movie. Flip is the size of a conventional passenger car and has enough space for six people. Its creator says the advanced vehicle is a taxi of the future. Flip has fulfilled the requirements of international automated driving standards. It's powered by electricity, but it can also use other fuels like gas and hydrogen. The owners of this futuristic vehicle do not have to worry about running out of power. That's because its replaceable batteries can be changed in less than 5 minutes once they are out of electricity. A rare baby giraffe is born in a zoo in western France as conservationists try to increase the population of this endangered species. The cute Rothschild giraffe is the second born in a French zoo this year. Caretakers say the cubs will stay with the facility for 1 year before they would be sent to another site to start their own families. The Rothschild giraffes are critically endangered, and conservationists say that only 1,600 of them exist now. The general giraffe populations in the wild have also decreased by around 30% in the last three decades.
for many professional climbers, ascending Mount Everest for even once remains an almost distant dream. However, a Nepali man has achieved that feat not once or twice, but 25 times. Kami Rita Sherpa has arrived back in the capital, Kathmandu, after breaking his own whopping record of 24 ascents to the summit of the world's tallest mountain. The veteran climber hopes that his accomplishment represents a big achievement for his small country. Climbing tall mountains runs in Kami's blood. He belongs to the Sherpa tribe, one of the Tibetan ethnic groups and native to the most mountainous region of Nepal.
Iconic Eiffel Tower in Paris has been illuminated for the first time using electricity produced from certified renewable hydrogen. In an amazing show, hydrogen-generated lights were projected onto the tower's frames, displaying various patterns and designs, making viewers ecstatic. It's a dream project of a French company based in the city of Saint-Malo. The company wanted to make the most recognizable landmark a showcase for its carbon-free technology. The objective is to bring more awareness of renewable energy to the public. The nightly event will continue until May the 30th. Countries around the world are investing a lot to develop hydrogen-related technologies.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll be discussing the commentary of the 23rd chapter of the Holy Quran, Surah Al-Mu'minun, or the Believers. Now let's just listen to the related verses and then we'll be back. So stay with us.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful. When you have boarded the ship, you and those with you, then say, praise to Allah who has saved us from the wrongdoing people.
Now, in this program, the verse under discussion is the 28th one. فَإِذَا اسْتَوَيْتَ أَنْتَ وَمَنْ مَعَكَ عَلَى الْفُلْكِ فقل الحمد لله الذي نجانا من القوم الظالمين. And when you and those with you are settled on the ark, say, all praise belongs to Allah who has delivered us from the unjust people. So you can see that deliverance from the dominance of the unjust, from those unjust rulers, is one of the blessings of the Almighty Allah. So first, we must be grateful to Allah for all His previous blessings, and then we ask Him for a new favor. The historical subjects of the Holy Quran are guiding signs and a cause for our development. They're not for the purposes of entertainment or for simple storytelling. They are giving us guidelines for reaching the station of mercy of the Almighty Allah. And in this verse addressing Noah, Allah says, "And when you and those with you are settled on the ark, say, all praise belongs to Allah." So there are some points regarding praising Almighty Allah. So the first one is that, of course, being far away from the unjust ones is one of the things that needs to be praised. Of course, all the blessings of the Almighty Allah need their own special kinds of praising. But the common between all these blessings is this phrase, Alhamdulillah, all praise belongs to Allah. And this is really commonly used, and we have been ordered throughout our traditions and narrations to praise Allah using this phrase. One interesting and noteworthy point in this regard is that the Prophet does not ask for the annihilation of the others, does not praise Allah for the perishing of the others, but yet he has been ordered to praise Allah because he has been delivered from the unjust people. So you see, even in this small verse, there are so many interesting points, practical points for praising Allah, for how to look at the blessings of the Almighty Allah in this world. He has been ordered by the Almighty Allah to praise Him because he has been saved from the unjust people, not because the unjust people have been dying. No. So Noah is told after this verse that after praising Allah for the first great blessing, and after he has been saved from the clutches of the oppressors, he should beseech Allah in another way that the next verse says. But before we move on to that, let's just have another look at the verse under discussion. فَإِذَا اسْتَوَيْتَ أَنْتَ وَمَنْ مَعَكَ عَلَى الْفُلْكِ فَقُلِ الْحَمْدُ لِلَّهِ الَّذِي نَجَّانَا مِنَ الْقَوْمِ الظَّالِمِينَ. And when you and those with you are settled on the ark, say, all praise belongs to Allah, who has delivered us from the unjust people.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
we
approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
أنتم الفقراء
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
Another noteworthy point in this verse is that he is praising Allah for giving him all the necessary needs for being delivered from the unjust people. But those tools that the Almighty Allah has given him the access to, they are seen only as a tool. So you see, he says, فَقُلِ الْحَمْدُ لِلَّهِ الَّذِي نَجَّانَا مِنَ الْقَوْمِ الظَّالِمِينَ. All praise belongs to Allah. He is the one who delivered us from the unjust people. But in the beginning of the verse, it said, فَإِذَا اسْتَوَيْتَ أَنْتَ وَمَنْ مَعَكَ عَلَى الْفُلْكِ. When you are settled on the ark, although you are on the ark, but you have to take Allah into your consideration. He was the one who has guided you to using this kind of tool as a way of being delivered. He is the one who delivered you from the unjust people, not the ark. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Imam Khomeini's viewpoints on the issue of Palestine. The Zionists are not people of religion. The false claims of being followers of Hazrat Moses, peace be upon him. There is one point I should make, and that is out of these well-known religions, which are today universally recognized by mankind, those being the religions of Hazrat Moses, Jesus, and Islam. When we examine the life of the Prophet Hazrat Moses, upon whom be peace, how he lived, the nature of his message and the struggle he embarked upon with the Taghut, with the oppressors, and compare this with how his people, how those who say we are the people of Hazrat Moses, we are the followers of Hazrat Moses act, we see there is no comparison. Moses opposed the Taghut, and these people who say they are the followers of Hazrat Moses are themselves Taghuts, yet they claim to be his followers.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Today we are with another episode of Spring of Truth from IRB English Radio. And I'm your host, Sayyid Mohsin Naqvi, with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh. Imam Khomeini has said in one of his speeches that if the nations would become aware of Islam, they will realize that whatever they seek exists in Islam. Now, generally, we know that the movements which are in the world, the freedom movements or any kind of movements, revolutions that were in the world, they all were for the reform of the mankind. The people were either slaves or they were like there was a racism. For example, we had this black movement or the things before it in the America as well, the Red Indians, the way they were killed by those who migrated to that place and who took their place, occupying someone's land. That we have obviously the Palestinians in this time and the time before, we have other examples. So I don't need to just bring the names or examples. I don't need to bring these names and examples. Just mentioning a couple of examples so our minds comes closer to the idea which Imam Khomeini is talking about. He says that anything that the nation seeks, it exists in Islam. Now we were trying to think, what does nation seek? They seek reform, they seek freedom, they want justice in the society. Obviously, when we have a parliament, when we have some people who are managing a country, they should distribute the resources justly among the people. So this justice is also something which nations are seeking.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Hello everyone, this is Mehdi and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent. Our program aims to address important issues in the subcontinent which affect the governments, people, organizations and the region as a whole. We will try to explain the issues, break down controversies surrounding them and try to have some external perspectives from experts and people.
In this edition of The Subcontinent, we are going to talk about Imam Khomeini and the legacy of Iran's Islamic Revolution across the Asian subcontinent. And we shall take a look at the similarities of anti-imperialist movements under the leadership of Imam Khomeini and Mahatma Gandhi.
Every year in early June, Iranians and many other devotees from all over the world commemorate the death anniversary of Imam Khomeini, the revered founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Imam Khomeini is specially admired across the Asian subcontinent for his legacy of fighting for freedom from the imperialist powers in the world. Such a spirit is well known for the people of the subcontinent who rose against the British colonialism under the leadership of another charismatic revolutionary, Mahatma Gandhi.
Grand Ayatollah Sayyid Ruhollah Mousavi Khomeini, better known as Imam Khomeini, passed away on June 3, 1989, at the age of 87. He devoted many years of his life to standing up to the US-backed Pahlavi dynasty and grew to become the iconic leader of the Iranian nation's struggle in the 1970s against the centuries-old monarchical tyranny. He eventually paved the way for the downfall of the despotic regime in 1979. Every year, mourners from all walks of life converge on Imam Khomeini's mausoleum in southern Tehran to pay homage to the architect of the Islamic Revolution and renew allegiance to the ideals of the 1979 revolution. The Islamic Revolution was a long chain of events that culminated in the overthrow of the Shah of Iran and the establishment of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Its cause and message of awakening and resistance has been resonating with Muslims and non-Muslims who are oppressed by corrupt authorities even decades later. It was a momentous and epical event in the modern history of Asia and Islam and had enormous social and political impacts across the subcontinent.
He has given the talisman of solidarity to the people of the world. How can we stand with the oppressed communities? And he has shown us that we may have to pay cost of standing with the oppressed, but we should not compromise, and we, without compromise, we should continue raising our voices for the oppressed of the world.
The ideology that was born out of the Islamic Revolution of Iran triggered a process of geopolitical realignment, whose influences remain to this very day. However, this hadn't been new for the people of the subcontinent. Such a revolutionary and rebellious mindset had been the zeitgeist of the people since the British Raj. Similarities between the Iranian social uprising against the despotic Pahlavi regime and the endeavors that ended the British colonialist rule over the subcontinent can be traced back to the spiritual fathers of these movements. Both Imam Khomeini and Gandhi had been uniting beacons of hope for the oppressed people of the globe.
The revolutionary movements led by Imam Khomeini and Bapu Gandhi both started with the ultimate goal of terminating the control of imperialist pawns over their countries. Their vision of independence, based on religion, marked a sea change in political attitudes of world powers towards Asian countries. Both leaders became the icons of war against those who saw themselves as the lords of the world, those who felt entitled to install or remove rulers, assist in assassinations and coup d'etats, and change dynasties and subjugate the public.
Imam Khomeini and Mahatma Gandhi both are very, very, very different from other world leaders, as they both have criticized the Western liberal democracies, and they both envisage different kind of democracies to rule in respective countries. Unfortunately, many people, including Mahatma Gandhi, did not succeed what he had in envisage. He didn't see that implementing in the country the self-rule, the Swaraj. But Imam Khomeini succeeded in challenging the Western liberal democracy, the idea of Western liberal democracy, because it is hegemonic and homogenized. It doesn't allow, it is in a very good package, but it doesn't allow other diversity to flourish. So the different model challenging the governance and the democratic model, the dominant model, is what I think is our leader's thought, and we have similarities.
Ayatollah Khomeini and Mahatma Gandhi liberated their countries from the evils of Western imperialism and transformed the politics of the region and its relation with the West forever.
Like many other leaders of popular uprisings, Imam Khomeini and Gandhi endured long periods of incarceration or exile, making them champions of grassroots movements that ultimately put an end to the foreigners' rule over their people. Both leaders were known to live a very simple life in a modest house, as they never let the love of power and wealth take over their hearts.
Under the guidance of Imam Khomeini, the Iranian Revolution was inspirational for the world as a promise of freedom, while it created waves of awakening in other countries of the region. It was an ideological revolution and therefore knew no material borders, only spiritual ones. Hence, right from the beginning, Imam Khomeini did not limit the revolution only to Iran. It was not only a call for national unity, but an ideological or global unity against the colonialism of the Western tyrants. The British colonization of India in 1858 precipitated the collapse of the classic Islamic civilization, and by early 20th century, almost the entire Muslim world was colonized by expansionist, oil-hungry European powers. The Ottoman Empire was the last representative of the classic Islamic civilization that collapsed after World War I in 1918. Therefore, the first half of 20th century saw many Muslim nations fight to regain their independence.
Through their patience and wisdom, Gandhi and Khomeini revived the freedom-seeking anti-imperialist mentality in their respective countries. They managed to alter the geopolitics of Asia and the entire global order, while their ideals are bound to inspire revolutionaries for years to come.
In addition to the similar anti-imperialistic spirit that is rooted in the Iranian Revolution and Indian popular uprising, Pakistan and Afghanistan felt the impacts of the establishment of Iran's Shia Muslim government even more because of their close proximity to the epicenter of the revolution. In Pakistan, the news of Iran's revolution was hailed as a victory for Islam, and the press was largely favorable towards the new government. Back then, General Zia-ul-Haq described Imam Khomeini as a symbol of Islamic insurgents. According to analysts, Imam Khomeini's respect and reach in Pakistan was greater than the country's longest-serving head of state, General Zia-ul-Haq himself. Throughout the 1980s and 90s, Islamic political parties and movements kept popping up in almost all Muslim countries because Imam Khomeini proved that a non-secular Islamic model was not just a dream, it was a reality. Like Gandhi, Imam Khomeini proved that it was possible to take on the West, revolt against their collaborating monarchs, and defeat dictators.
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to The Subcontinent every Monday here on IRIB English Radio.
Now, to have more insight, we are joined by Rashid Maghbool, senior journalist. First of all, I would like to thank Mr. Maghbool for being on the program, and let's begin by asking, how was Imam Khomeini known across the world, especially the subcontinent, and how much of an influence has he had in India or Pakistan?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Thank you very much for giving me a chance to speak on this show and speak about such a great personality whose life has influenced and continues to influence millions of people across the globe. As far as this question is concerned, the world opinion about Imam Khomeini has always been mixed, and it continues to be mixed. There are people who criticized him then, and criticize him now. And then there are people who loved him then and who love him now and who followed him then and follow him now. But when we look, towards the Europe or America, who is the arch rival of Imam Khomeini's Iran and Imam Khomeini's philosophy, even in that camp, in the Western world, we see people who even if they criticize him or disagree with him, but they cannot stop praising him for many different qualities that Imam Khomeini possessed. I am recalled of an interview that a professor emeritus of Princeton University, Richard Falk, did with Imam Khomeini a day before Imam was supposed to return to Iran, and this interview took place in Paris. Richard has written about it, and in his writing he says that, I mean, the words that he used, that he has used for Imam Khomeini are actually remarkable. He says that he found Imam Khomeini as a person with active mind and sharp intelligence. And then he says that, he was quite awake to the realities of the world. And also that he was very clear in his mind that what he wants. And then there are so many other academics. I mean, the much celebrated philosopher of West, Foucault, his kind of work on Imam Khomeini or the Iranian Revolution. And there are so many others, the academics and the journalists or the opinion makers in the West also, who may disagree with Imam Khomeini's ideas, but they are still found in awe of his personality. I can tell you that, as we say in English, that love him or hate him, but you can't ignore him. So far as subcontinent is concerned, it is not hidden from anyone. I mean, anyone can see it with open eyes that Imam Khomeini continues to be a reference point for the people in the Muslim world and in subcontinent as well.
Do you see any similarities between the father of the Iranian Revolution, Imam Khomeini, and the fathers of the Indian rise to independence from colonialism, like Gandhi or Nehru?
Yeah. First, there is this correction that as far as Gandhi is concerned, M.K. Gandhi, he is officially the father of the nation in India, and is widely accepted as the leader of the freedom struggle in India. But that status has not been accorded to Nehru, although Nehru was one of the important leaders of the freedom struggle of India. So that is one. Second, yes, there are similarities that you can find between Mr. Gandhi and Imam Khomeini, in the sense that Gandhi, when you look at his struggle, which he started, after he came back from South Africa, he also used religion, as a tool for the awakening of the people of India, and he also through his moral lectures and by invoking religion, he also instilled the confidence and hope in the people of India, which prepared them to fight against the imperial powers. And he also, created this whole idea and structure of self-reliance, the Swadeshi movement, the indigenous cultural movement, economic movement, total self-reliance, and in politics also. So in that sense, you can compare, you can see similarities between that methodology of both the leaders. I mean, in the same way you see Imam Khomeini used spirituality and religion to awaken the masses, to instill confidence in them, to raise back the dead hopes of winning over the evil and getting back what is rightfully theirs. So in that sense, yes, you can find the similarity, but it is very important for me to tell you that as far as some of the tragic events of our part of the world are concerned, like partition of India and especially the Kashmir imbroglio.
Thank you, Mr. Maqbool. Now let's take a break and take a look at how the global media has covered this subject.
Arguing that Ruhollah Khomeini was the Gandhi of Iran, this article examines how Americans perceived the Iranian Revolution and shows how many influential individuals failed to understand or acknowledge the true nature of the Shia opposition led by Imam Khomeini. The author finds the answer to these questions in the antipathy that many Americans had for the authoritarian rule for the Shah. Professor Kapil Kumar, who is the chair of the History School of Social Sciences at Indira Gandhi National Open University, IGNOU, in New Delhi, says Imam Khomeini went from massive mobilization of people, which was the second example in Asia after Mahatma Gandhi. However, Imam's total call was based on religion, as he was a practicing clergy, and Gandhi did use all religions to unite Indians, but he failed to stop the partition of the Indian subcontinent on the lines of religion. While Imam Khomeini succeeded in Iran, Mahatma Gandhi failed in India. Imam Khomeini and Mahatma Gandhi are among the leaders who used the theory of non-violence in their struggles. The findings of this paper indicate that both Imam Khomeini and Mahatma Gandhi believed in non-violence and applied this method in their struggles. It also says the idea of non-violence has its roots in the religious teachings the two leaders followed, and the anthropology of both the leaders, despite stemming from different fundamentals.
And one last question, Mr. Maqbool, for you. What is Imam Khomeini and the Iranian Revolution associated with?
It is associated with many things. Like, as I said, and I repeat, and it's very important, that it is associated with the feeling and with the conviction that you can stand up to the arrogant powers and you can win also. And it is associated with this belief that you can create your own path and you can stand for your conviction. And then it is most importantly, it is associated with the most important thing, trust in Allah, the unshakable faith in the Creator, and spiritually guided and aided movement is the best way to seek rights and get justice. That's what it stands for. And it is associated with hope for humanity. Humanity, I say, and especially for the Muslim world, it stands and it is associated with a hope for better future, for honorable and dignified life. and taking control of your own affairs. That's what it is associated with. The honor that people have lost, the dignity that people have lost. So it is associated with the greatest value of humanity and Islam and Quran, which is ghairat. It tells me, I mean, how it touched me. I tell you that I consider myself very lucky, and I thank Allah for this, that I'm an 80s born person, that I shared this time and space with that great personality, you know, just for some little time, in the sense that I was also breathing in this world when he was around somewhere in Iran.
There you have it, Mr. Maqbool, senior journalist from Kashmir. Thank you for your precious time, sir. Now let's see how the people have reacted on social media and cyberspace.
Saim Raza has expressed his respect and admiration for both leaders, noting that such icons never truly die. Hasnain Husseini says Imam Khomeini's ideals for an Islamic society should be actualized in Muslim countries, noting that such guidelines can solve all the problems that Pakistan is facing. Moid Pirzada has extolled Imam Khomeini's political visions for their lasting power throughout the global political system, even decades after his demise.
And that was our special episode for the death anniversary of the great leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution and his impacts and connections to the freedom-seeking movements across the subcontinent. Thank you. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take care.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars from IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints, and I'm Atta, the host of this program. We have two guest speakers in today's discussion, Brother Ali Alavian and Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, thanks for inviting.
You're welcome, brother, and Brother Ali Alavian, assalamu alaikum to you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, thank you for having me here.
So regarding the main features of the hegemonic powers in today's world and the challenges that they are facing, for today's discussion we want to get a very important topic, which was also tackled by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the Supreme Leader of Iran, and that is the challenges that the hegemonic powers have regarding the Islamic values in today's world. When you look at the pictures of some Muslim lands from outside, you find them very much similar in terms of architecture to the Western world nowadays, with the big, big towers and the big, big buildings, okay? So I do want to say that, yes, when they are attacking the Muslim lands and the Muslim values, they are attacking your system of values.
Mm-hmm.
So the system of values refers to your lifestyle, your culture. And the interesting point is that when they want to make documents about the Muslim lands, they do not capture your part of the country, which is like a Western world, but your original, aboriginal, we can say, cultures and the system of values. And they win many movies, and they win Oscar, they win Golden Globe, they win so many, you know, prizes all around the world. So the system of values is good. Very but true. As good as it shows you how simple you are, how servant
third
you are,
world.
Okay, third world country you are, and okay, wow, what a country you are. But when it comes to the exact system of values, for example, looking for justice, looking for freedom, Muslims are free, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They are not being oppressed. Then it become a challenge for the Western powers. Now we have to attack them. Now we have to put discrimination among them. Now we have to put...
And what I want to pinpoint, and one important point, brother, before we move towards, we actually Sayyid. Go to Sayyid. Actually they are trying, they are making very good lies to actually, to deceive the whole world. Why? under the name of democracy, this democratic movement actually, unlike before, that they came to actually to directly tell people that this is the power that we have and we need to colonize you and we need to take your power and to take your resources. Now they've got mature and they know what to do and how to deal with the people. Under the name of the democracy, they go and, for example, they attack one group and they let some other group, which is their servant, to be in power. Look, like what the kind of way that they behave in Saudi Arabia. Is there any democracy in Saudi Arabia, but they know it as a democratic nation and they do not even attack it once in a blue moon? You see? But in a country...
Yeah, even they were harsher than Iran in terms of the women rights. Mm. They did not let the women to drive up 5-4 years ago, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
The women had no right to vote maybe in the country.
And they didn't have even ID.
There is no voting.
There's no voting. No, I mean, what kind... And all of a sudden, when Bin Salman comes to the scene, I mean, the son, may Allah curse him, you know, for the blood of the people, of the children of Yemen on his hand. When all of a sudden it comes to the scene, wow, the most famous singers from the U.S. are invited to the U.S. The most important WWE wrestlings are held over there. You know, the car race is over there. Singers come over there. Porn stars come over there. Is this a democracy?
Mm-hmm.
This is not a system of the values, brother.
Yeah.
You are losing your system of values day by day. And believe me, if this line continues, people are ready to ban their Hajj pilgrimage.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are the key holder, man, over there. What are you doing? Are you changing, for example, the Jeddah and the, you know, the other cities of the Saudi Arabia into what? A bar or a whorehouse or something like that? This is what, you know, and they are trapped. You know, like Trump said, we are milking you.
Mm.
Okay? We're milking you. Is it? Well, could you remember the picture Trump was showing to Bin Salman? These are the new facilities, the missiles and the airplanes and this and that. And you want to buy them?
$400 billion.
Yeah. And the wild them. And we milk you. Okay?
Mm.
So this is the milking sheep. And we have the milking goats.
And they're doing the same in other countries, but they do not call it directly, we're milking you. But they do milk the others.
Yes.
I don't want to name any other countries, even in our neighborhood. They are doing even worse than that under the name of democracy. But they are actually killing people, oppressing nations. But the outcome of which is to annihilate, in their own view, in their eyes, annihilate what Islam wants and what Islam is.
But Sayyid Mohsen Nawi, I think the problem is also from the side of the planners and the Muslim lands too, not to introduce these Islamic values in a thorough manner to its people and apply them also in your countries. Because the system of values over there, but how to apply them and how to make them applicable with today's daily life in the 21st century is also very important. It's difficult, but it's important, isn't it?
That is true. And the main reason is obviously when Muslim Ummah has forgot its own values, what can you expect from them?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the Western enemies, they are basically attacking the Muslim Ummah. They want to change this way of thinking. They want to make them their slaves. But when they forgot about their own values, then no one can help them. It is the duty of the scholars, basically.
Yes.
It is the duty of, the education industry. You know why I said industry? Because in the West, they call it as an industry.
That's right.
It is the duty of scholarly people that they need to basically convey the values, and they need to remind the values which they have. You know, the system in the school is now, unfortunately, for example, if I give you the example of Pakistan, for example, or other countries, if I can name them.
Yes.
The majority of school, there is a public school system, for example, that is for the poor people who do not have any money. And there is other school, private sector. Most of them, for example, in Pakistan, I can just name City School, Beacon House, I don't know. There are other schools. They all are either they have the syllabus of Oxford or Cambridge or America.
Yes.
Now, when you teach your kids such syllabuses, mm-hmm. they're not going to learn about the values, the original values which are said by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
That's right.
Number one. Number two, you know, English language, it is an international language, mm-hmm. no doubt. we accept it, but this is not the main language.